Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaverLife.com. And Thanksgiving is coming up, my favorite holiday of the year, because it all revolves around food. And hopefully some that perhaps you've grown in your garden. And right now, in spite of a number of cold nights, very cold nights, our Swiss chard and kale is doing just fine. In fact, it usually survives the winter. Sometimes covered in snow, but it doesn't seem to matter. They're very tough. Now, next year, they'll go to seed, so you're not really, don't expect bigger kale and bigger Swiss chard next year. They'll go to seed. They won't produce much in the way of leaves, and, but you'll have lots of seeds, and they're kind of pretty when they flower. Not showy, but interesting, and saving seeds is always kind of a good thing to do. So maybe you let one of them go to seed, because I'll guarantee that one kale or one Swiss chard will produce plenty of seeds for you. You don't need, all 15 kale going to seed. And it will take up a lot of space in the garden, so you have trouble planting other things if you're allowing the kale and Swiss chard to go to seed. So enjoy it now. I've got some kale and Swiss chard in containers, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do, where I'm going to put those containers. Leave them outside. They are plastic, so it's not like clay pots that will break and the freeze thaw that we get during the winter. Your clay pots are unlikely to survive being outside during the winter, but plastic does. I'm not sure this will gain me a lot in terms of sunshine this time of the year. I had them in containers on my flat roof over our dining room, and that helped for September, October, maybe not so much for winter. So I'll probably take them down, put them down in the backyard by the garden, and they can, we can harvest them down there and not have to go out on the flat roof to get them in the winter. So hopefully you do have some of these things left in the garden. And if you haven't planted garlic, as I mentioned several times recently, it's not too late to plant garlic. You can pretty much plant it till the ground freezes and have some nice garlic to harvest in July next year. It's kind of planting with some hope. By July, hopefully this pandemic will be at least somewhat under control, where we can start to normalize life a little bit. I would think it's looking maybe like fall is likely, July maybe. So plant some garlic and hope that the timing of the harvest coincides with some relief from the pandemic. You also will get flowers called garlic scapes that you can harvest in May. That you have to harvest them if you want to get the biggest bulbs possible, because they will steal energy from the bulbs. And the scapes are really good to eat. So wonderful sautéed. And if you haven't planted some bulbs yet, definitely not too late to plant those either. Daffodils, tulips, pretty much any of the spring bulbs can still go in the ground, and they probably won't even be late blooming. I have planted daffodils and tulips in a thaw in February, and they were well over a month late blooming. But then they get back on schedule, but don't procrastinate till February, because who knows whether we'll get a thaw. Just dig a big hole, spread them out in there a little bit, cover it up, and you can plant a couple dozen daffodils or tulips in a few minutes if you dig large holes. I usually will put the soil on an empty plastic mulch bag, and that just makes it easier to sort of put it back over the bulbs once you've planted them. You can put little tiny bulbs in the same hole, but not as deep, that'll bloom earlier, and you'll potentially have snowdrops blooming in a couple of months. They probably will need a little longer planted this late, I guess. But once they're in the ground, sometimes you can have snowdrops blooming in January, especially if they're in a warm place. So as you think about where to plant some of the early blooming ones, winter aconite, crocus, you want an area near a foundation that gets sort of south-southwest sun, near a driveway or sidewalk or something. Stone holds a lot of heat, and that makes a difference in heating the ground around it and speeding up when these bulbs will bloom. So for a number of years, I did a first in bloom contest, which is maybe partly global warming and just became rather crazy how many things were in bloom in January. So I haven't done it in quite a few years, but most years people found snowdrops blooming the first week of January, if not January 1st. And the exceptions were some years where we just had really heavy snow cover, and you know, the snowdrops are only maybe 4 or 5 inches high, so snow cover will keep them from blooming as early. But again, near a foundation, sidewalk, driveway, the snow will disappear faster. Again, the heat will help to melt the snow, and they will bloom much earlier. So you can have fun with these microclimates and get some snowdrops, some winter aconite, some anemone blanda. These are inexpensive, little tiny bulbs. Don't have to plant them very deep. And again, they're going to be blooming in a few months. You know, certainly February. And so, you know, we get through Thanksgiving and the holidays coming up in December, and then we're literally weeks away from some of these bulbs blooming. So daffodils and tulips are bigger, they're showier, but you know, they're blooming when spring is here. I really love these little bulbs that bloom long before spring arrives, many of them. And you know, I appreciate the snowdrops, even though they're white and the snow is white, but then I really love the winter aconites that are bright yellow, while the you know, the trees are bare and the ground is either white or brown, and the grass is not that green. And these bright yellows, winter aconite, are really showy. So you can probably still find some at area nurseries if you're, you know, looking for something in particular, like winter aconite. Maybe call first, see if they have them. But you have a lot of nurseries to choose from. Bristol's often has a really good bulb selection. Sarah's Garden Center, Grandpa's Nursery, Wayside. I haven't seen what Gendrich's has in Irondequoit, but I imagine they have some bulbs. There's tons of places. Garden Factory. So lots of independent garden centers, and I'm sure you can find some bulbs. They probably won't discount them much right now, even though it's getting kind of late in the season. Most gardeners are put their trowels and shovels to bed. But as we get in December, maybe they would cut some deals with you. Quite a few years ago now, I saw like 1,500 daffodil bulbs for $50. It was like December 30th. They were, you know, no one else was planting bulbs at that point, but the ground hadn't frozen, so I was able to plant them, and actually I was planting them as the ground was freezing, which was kind of weird, because I'd dig up soil to put the bulbs in, and then I'd try and put the soil back in, and it would be partly frozen. I mean, it was a cold day. The ground wasn't frozen, but that night it was going to sort of lock it in for winter, so I frantically was planting bulbs well past dark, and again these clumps of soil were freezing before I could put them back in the hole, but the bulbs were fine. They bloomed late, again, you know, a good month late, which is kind of funny, because I'm sure it surprised some people that daffodils were blooming in June when they're normally blooming in May. But again, it all depends on when Mother Nature shuts off access to the ground. And I haven't checked out I'm sure it's out, the new Rare Seeds catalog for 2021. Rare Seeds has done this catalog for quite a few years now, and it's unusual because they sell it. Most seed catalogs are free or have been, and they have this amazing catalog, Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds, and it is, as they call it, the definitive heirloom seed catalog. That's free, but they also have the whole seed catalog, which is what I have, and it's like $12. You think, well, why would anyone pay $12 for a seed catalog? Well, this thing is a book. I think it has somewhere in the range of 400 pages, lots of detail and photos and color. It's stunning, and each year they put so much work into making this, printing this, in an age when there are really very few seed catalogs left. It used to be that I might get 10 seed catalogs in generally, you know, January 1st. And really, I don't think I get any mailed to me for free. You can request them. Harris Seeds has a catalog, of course, but they don't mail them out like they used to. I don't mind paying the $12 for this whole seed catalog. And it's by the Rare Seeds company, Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds. Rare Seeds is their website, rareseeds.com. They're based in Missouri, I think, very near one of the homes of Laura Ingalls Wilder. And I've interviewed them a couple of times over the years. Fascinating fruits and vegetables, really, you know, for a long winter, this catalog will get you through, and you'll be ordering some probably. Also, Fruition Seeds, you can peruse what they'll have for 2021 online, fruitionseeds.com, another business that is focusing on heirloom seeds and also open pollinated seeds so that you can save them. And Fruition Seeds is based in Naples. So some great sources of seeds. Crossman Seed Company continues to operate, one of the oldest seed companies still around in the United States, in East Rochester. And again, the thinking about seeds, what you could plant next year, just is a form of hope, you know, and gardeners are eternally optimistic people. So if you want any details on these seed catalogs, send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. Some rather shocking news in the DNC a couple days ago. Steve Orr wrote about the spotted lantern fly, which I've been talking about on several of my shows because it has a potential to really wreak havoc in the Finger Lakes wine region. It's already wreaking havoc in Pennsylvania's. Some of their wineries are really struggling with this insect, invasive species, which, you know, as of the broadcast last weekend, I'd heard that, you know, it's taken over big areas of Pennsylvania, but hasn't really shown up here other than the occasional one or two dead insects. And I heard that there was a infestation in Staten Island in New York City that they're going to be trying to control. But I'm not, wasn't that worried about Staten Island. Those insects aren't going to make it here that fast. It's worrisome, but it's not really threatening the Finger Lakes. Then I heard it was a podcast that some egg clusters had been found in Ithaca, and then there was a 1-hour seminar on the spotted lantern fly by Penn State this week, which they did a webinar, it was on Tuesday, and If you want a link to this webinar, as you want to learn more about the spotted lantern fly, which is a leaf hopper, it's not a fly actually, but anyway, it's I can send you the links to this. There are quite a few different ones out there, but many of them are not very recent. This one, again, was just aired on Monday or Tuesday this week. And it appears from Steve Orr's article in the DNC and from listening to this person from Penn State that the infestation at Ithaca may be bigger than we realized, which is kind of the story of this insect all along. It appeared in 2014 in Pennsylvania and didn't really explode in numbers till maybe a couple years after that. But the webinar by Penn State was it was especially sobering because of the life cycle and the activities of this spotted lanternfly in its various life stages. And up until now, kind of thought that you could look for them mainly on a tree of heaven, which is another invasive species, and you know that we had a couple years before they would show up in the Finger Lakes, because again, they're counties, like 25 plus counties in Pennsylvania that are quarantined, and the idea is this is not related to the coronavirus. They're under two quarantines. One to try and keep these egg masses and juveniles and adult spotted lantern flies from being transported elsewhere. And the person doing the webinar this past week for Penn State actually lives in Berks County, which is sort of the home of where this infestation began. So, again, as you learn more about this, it becomes more frightening. If you have vineyards, maybe not so much for orchards. They haven't seen as much activity or damage in orchards as in grapevines and hop vines and some trees. But one of the issues that I hadn't realized until recently in watching some of this. These online seminars and things is that some of the damage, and especially fruit crops and things, comes from the molds that grow on the honeydew left behind by these insects. And this is fascinating, maybe even more fascinating if it weren't so scary, but it was Julie Urban, one of the researchers who presented in a seminar from this spring, had some slow motion video of a spotted lanternfly basically throwing its excrement, which is honeydew, away from its body. And I've always kind of wondered, I kind of assumed this happened because we have insects like aphids and scale insects, which, you know, are often the scale gets on citrus. I've had them on my key lime tree, and I bring that in for the winter, and then the scale insects, you know, think it's summer and so nice and warm, and so they start reproducing a lot, and you start seeing these specks of honeydew, which are sticky, and in the summer will attract bees and yellow jackets and ants who like to consume it. But then a sooty mold also grows on it. So you might find the leaves, let's say you have a citrus tree indoors this winter. Later on this winter, you might notice that some of the leaves are turning black. And if that's partly because you didn't notice that before that, there were little spots of honeydew on other leaves, on the pot, on the floor, on nearby. And I've always, you know, I always sort of assumed that the honeydew just drops straight down, and they shoot it out, and so it ends up on things near your tree, but not under your tree, and or you know, indoor plant or whatever these insects are on, And so, but this was the first time I'd actually seen how they do this. And just, it can go several feet, I think. And that's why it ends up making an even bigger mess indoors when you have this scale or aphids. This happens often on roses and other things. Even you'll notice it under trees. I remember on Park Avenue, there are some linden trees kind of near Stever's Candies. And each summer, the sidewalk would be black and sticky. And that's because the aphids up in those linden trees or basswood, which were dropping all this, their excrement, which is very clear. You might have seen it on your car windows or, you know, your windshield, and you see these little tiny dots that are clear basically, and you put the windshield wipers on and they don't come off, and they eventually do, but they're not easy to get off. And so, you know, you park under or near one of these trees and you'll see those show up on your windshield. And again, then the sooty mold starts to grow on the honeydew that they drop. And so those are just things to look for this winter. If you have houseplants, maybe things that you brought in from outside, things that you've had problems with before, you want to try and keep them away from each other so the insects can't spread. Often insects are very plant specific, so they won't spread that much to other plants, but the spotted lanternfly is not very specific. In fact, something like 70 plus species of trees and vines that they will attack, and they don't think that's an exhaustive list. That's part of the very bad news about this spotted lanternfly. So again, you know, watching these webinars, yeah, you'll learn a lot. It's one of the things that really struck me, and there's tons of fascinating research going on. Luckily, it is being funded, although they need to do more faster so that we find some way to control these. But there's some fascinating research. They took some of the juveniles, and they put some sort of luminescent material on them, and then they want to try and figure out how far these juveniles moved. So, you know, if you have a pest you're trying to kill or control, ideally it doesn't move very far, and you got a shot at, you know, trying to squish it or spray it with something and control it. Unfortunately, these juveniles, they found with this luminescence, they, you know, they put it on the insects, and then turn the black lights on at night, and they could actually see these insects. It was really kind of a fascinating idea, because they're very small and they actually move very quickly. They're leaf hoppers, so they're fast. And they figured out that these juveniles will move many feet every day, and not just up and down a tree, but from tree to tree, from yard to yard, they really can move, which is horrible news for trying to control them. Again, you'd hope that once they hatch, they would stay in one place, and these leafhoppers go all over the place. So that was one of the really sobering messages of one of the most recent webinars, was research into how fast they move. In all life stages, they do fly as adults, and a lot of people have been saying they don't fly very well, which is true. They tend to actually climb up to the top of a tree and then jump off. And they can fly somewhat, but maybe it's more of a controlled descent rather than flight. But they, I guess they crash land. They're not very good at landing, which is kind of bizarre and weird, but and I'm after reading Steve Orr's article in the DNC and seeing these webinars this week about spotted lanternfly, I'm not as optimistic about our ability to keep them out of our region very much longer. I mean, they're here. They're in Ithaca, in a wooded area, Fall Creek, and the one of the other problems with these spotted lanternflies is that they lay most of their egg clusters way up in a tree. They are, again, they've done quite a bit of research on this, and it looks like 80% of the egg clusters are at like 15 to 20 feet and higher, up to 60 or 70 feet high in a tree. And so the researchers were trying to use, you know, really good binoculars, high-resolution binoculars to try to locate these egg clusters, and they really, it didn't work. They can't, they're too well hidden and camouflaged, really. And the binoculars didn't work. They didn't help them find more egg clusters. They actually had to go up in the trees, climb the trees, and again, you can go out and control something and maybe scrape egg clusters off if they're in the top or you know, within 10 to 15 feet of the ground, you know, a small ladder. But if they're, most of them are 20 to 60 feet high in trees, there is just no chance of, you know, in a wooded situation, to try to get all those egg clusters. So I'm not sure what they're going to try and do in Ithaca this winter. They have until, you know, probably April to try to locate egg clusters. You know, someday maybe we'll have little drones that can identify them. But at this point, I don't see any way they're going to be able to control this infestation in Ithaca, which of course is right at the base of Cayuga Lake. And, you know, these insects have, again, another part of the strange physiology of this insect, this leafhopper has kind of a little suction cup on its legs. And supposedly it can withstand something like 30 miles an hour, hanging on to a, you know, smooth surface of your car. And so they can hitchhike, you know, and then there are parts of your car they could hide on, which are, don't get that kind of speed, even though you're traveling 60 miles an hour. You know, they get in the hood or somewhere, they're not facing those kinds of wind speeds. And it's just, yeah, it's sobering, I must say. And I was hoping, you know, and I know it's 2020 and there's so many things that have gone wrong this year, it seems. And I thought after scouting for weeks in the Finger Lakes, not finding anything, I didn't actually scout Ithaca. That was one of the next, Ithaca and Elmira were a couple of my next cities to visit. But, you know, this, the news that it's in Ithaca is really kind of devastating. It's, again, watch the webinars if you're interested in this insect. I was really glad that Steve Orr showed and not only described what's happening in his article in the DNC a couple days ago, but also had a nice photo of the spotted lanternfly as it is normally seen as an adult, which is at rest with gray wings and black spots on it. Often you see photos where it's flying and it shows off some red colors, which is far more spectacular, but you're far less likely to see them flying than you are just sitting on the trunk of a tree. They're probably not around anymore if you're traveling around our area because of the cold weather, but there were some sighted in Ithaca a couple weeks ago, well after some hard and what I thought were killing frosts. So at that point, I assumed the season of scouting for him was over, and apparently not. So read about it, be aware of it, and we want to hold them off for a year or two because a lot of research is going into how to control them using bacteria, things that normally kill them but are not around enough quantities to control the spotted lanternfly. So I'm sure there's some listeners who are just tired of me talking about the spotted lanternfly. I do tend to get hyper-focused on especially invasive species, but this one, some have said, is maybe the worst invasive species in the last several hundred years, and there are a lot of invasive species that have come to our area or come to this country. And check out the article in the Democrat and Chronicle, and be aware. And if you've seen something like this, you need to let the Department of Environmental Conservation know. Let me know. There aren't too many lookalikes, and we need to know where to look for them in terms of egg clusters and juveniles in the spring. They won't hatch out until later, until more like May. They don't start as early as aphids and some other insects. So be aware. And this, I started out this week thinking that the Finger Lakes was in a good place so far, and we just had to look for these things and catch them early. But and this infestation in Ithaca is very worrisome. If you have questions on plants that are in your garden or bugs, email me, michael@saverlife.com. It is a great season to do some pruning and things like holly and use that for decoration for Thanksgiving and the holidays. These shrubs often get leggy anyway, so it really is kind of beneficial to prune them back. You got to leave some green on them. You can't cut them, you know, all the green off, but you can usually cut quite a bit, and you could turn it into a wreath. You could use it as a table decoration, but really beautiful indoors, and holly in particular will hold up a long time. It is it stays looking good even though it's not in water. Just sometimes just dries and looks like it's alive. It's remarkable. The one, speaking of invasive plants, Oriental bittersweet is one that you, and I often mention this around the holidays, you want to think twice about using that in decorating. It's for sale. You can buy the pieces of bittersweet with the berries on them, and they're beautiful, definitely gorgeous. But if those get loose in your yard, they are very hard to control. They'll grow 60 feet up a tree. They'll grow 60 feet underground and start showing up all over the place before you realize that you have this bittersweet. So, you know, if you have it inside, you figure, well, that's, you know, what could happen. But then, you know, at the end of the season, someone gets rid of that. And on their way to the trash barrel, some of those seeds will probably fall off. Or maybe they're even worse, they put it in the compost pile, and now you've got this, you know, mother load of bittersweet seeds. So resist the temptation to buy it and decorate with other things that are not invasive. Bittersweet is, it's crazy how tough that plant is. Very orange root. So if you pull a little seedling out of your garden at some point this past year and this coming year, and the roots are bright orange, you just found a bittersweet seedling that probably some birds brought the seeds to your yard. If you pull it up and you get a yellow root, that's usually mulberry, another plant that is sort of sown by the birds after they eat the mulberries. So beware of bittersweet. Not necessarily something you want to have. Well, you definitely don't want to have in your yard. You probably don't want to use as decoration. And really the worst thing you could do is use it as decoration outside, because some of those berries will definitely fall out And, you know, even like they fall under your porch and they start growing under your porch, you don't realize it's there. They're nasty. So beware of bittersweet. But if you have trouble identifying something, you're wondering what you could do with it, whether you should prune it, how much you should prune it, send me a couple photos, michael@saverlife.com. And we'll be back with the food show, discover the Finger Lakes, but also tomorrow, the grapevine. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and be careful. Be careful either wear a mask and try to keep everyone else safe. Crucial time right now to do that. I'll be back with 4 to Love of Food here at SaverLife.com.